Now, whether Ephialtes, like Cleisthenes for that matter, was a genuine political reformer or exploiting the situation for his own ends cannot be answered. But he's as important to Athenian democracy as Solon or Cleisthenes. What's surprising to us, at least, is that Ephialtes is consigned to relative oblivion compared to Solon. In 4th century oratory, for example, Solon is cited many, many more times than Cleisthenes, and Ephialtes almost never. In fact, Solon is so famous that it's common for him to be referred to in oratory simply as the lawgiver. Everyone knew who this was. It's a bit like talking about the boss today. Everyone knows this is Springsteen. Now, why Ephialtes got such little press in our ancient sources is really unknown. But when we step back and survey the development of Athenian democracy from Solon to the mid to late classical period, Ephialtes' role in it cannot be downplayed. I often say that Ephialtes finished what Solon began, and I think he needs to come more out of the shadows and take center stage a bit more. So let's find out now what he got up to, having surveyed the events that led up to his legislation. Well, the Athenian constitution, disappointingly, gives us only the bare bones of what Ephialtes did, and that brief account does not do justice to his legislation. We're told that Ephialtes attacked that last bastion of the aristocrats, the Areopagus. He conducted a purge of its members, and he transferred its political and judicial powers to the assembly, boule, and the law courts. So as far as the first one goes, he evidently investigated the members of the Areopagus for corruption. He expelled many who he found guilty, and he had them tried in court. The damage done to the Areopagus' name for many of its members being found corrupt would have been enormous, and its reputation as a body took a significant nosedive. Think of our often generally cynical view of politicians or corporate executives today, and how their reputations, and even that of their office, declines when they're found to be corrupt. If this wasn't bad enough, the second of Ephialtes' moves against the Areopagus didn't just dilute the clout of that council, it made it impotent. Now, what does the Athenian constitution mean when it says that Ephialtes transferred the Areopagus' political and judicial powers to the assembly, boule, and the courts? Well, we're talking about removing jurisdiction over magistrates from the Areopagus to the political organs, the other political organs. As we've mentioned before, when a magistrate, an archon for example, ended his year in office, he would be scrutinized for conduct during that term of office. This was a procedure called a euthynae. If he were found corrupt, he would not be allowed to become a member of the Areopagus, and he was put on trial for corruption. The euthynae had been conducted by the Areopagus. As Ephialtes' purge shows, that council had clearly overlooked questionable activities on the part of magistrates and probably admitted everyone, certainly from its own social class. This isn't a surprise at all, but now Ephialtes' legislation, his transfer of the euthynae to the assembly and the boule, meant that the people now had this far more powerful role over their officials. Their own power increased dramatically as a result. These magistrates were now accountable to the people, not just the closed shop that was the Areopagus. And the people are not likely to approve someone's conduct if he was corrupt, because the assembly and the boule were composed of nobles and non-nobles. The nobles might let the man off, the non-nobles wouldn't. Second, and this is an extension really of the first point, there was now a real attempt to curb corruption at the public level. Magistrates know that it will be harder to mask if they have not discharged their duties properly, and they know that if they're found to have been corrupt, they'll face a public trial.